So, Hare Krishna. Welcome to the first session of our International Japa and Kirtan Retreat. It's called Entering the Retreat. We will today put you on the right track, so to say, or help you to first of all arrive here and then build your, what we call Sankalpa, your inner orientation for the week which is ahead of us. I would like to start with Jai Radha Madhava, and then we will have many things for you. Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Vihadi Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Vihadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihadi Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Gunya Vihari. Now introduce to you the theme of this retreat, which is quite special. You know, during a retreat, we want to help all of us. We want to come to the level to chant with taste. We must develop a taste for our spiritual practice so that we will do it with joy and with pleasure, that we will be ready to give voluntarily our best effort to the practice, and that we are empowered really to overcome also difficulties during our practice. If we practice bhakti without taste, it will be a mechanical execution of duties. But if we practice bhakti with taste, it will be a voluntary offering for Krishna's pleasure. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that most mundane religions are executed out of three motivations. One is fear. If I don't do this, I will in some ways have bad results in my life. The other is hope. And the last of the three is out of a sense of duty. I believe that many of our efforts in Krishna consciousness are also done in this way. Maybe we are afraid that if I don't do this, I won't get initiation, or if I'm initiated, I don't get prasadam, if I don't chant my rounds, or we are afraid that we will not make it at the end of our life, or we hope that if I do this, there will be a greater benefit for me, a greater joy in my life, and so on. But most of what I have seen while traveling all over the world and giving these japa retreats, most of the devotees do it out of a sense of duty. They feel this is what we do in the Hare Krishna movement, and then they feel it is my duty to also do it because I'm a member. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says these three motivations, fear, hope, and a sense of duty, are mundane motivations which can be found in mundane religions. In Krishna consciousness, he says, we need one motivation. We need to do it with ruchi, with taste. I like doing it. And I think it is clear if you look to the essence of Krishna consciousness, it means to make a relationship with the personal God. How do you think Krishna likes it if you say I'm doing this practice out of duty only? Imagine you have a friend or someone who pretends to be a friend, and he says, "I came here because it's my duty. I gave you a birthday present because it's my duty. I love you because it's my duty." Imagine in a husband and wife relationship where the wife says, "I'm only doing this because it's my duty to you." The husband says, "Oh, after 40 years, this I have to hear. I worked so hard for you." Hare Krishna. Krishna is not so pleased if we do our Krishna consciousness and our Krishna conscious practice out of a sense of duty. It should be, "I like doing it." Yavolam is a Belkane expression. Yavolam, I like to do this. I am here because I want to be here. I chant Hare Krishna because I like you, Krishna, and I like to glorify you. This is where we want to slowly bring our practice to. I also want to say, if during your life as a devotee, if you don't learn to come to this platform where you do things out of a taste, then most probably you will not be able to do this for a long time. You will more or less join those embittered. Hare Krishna, one parrot fell down. Or you will become embittered and frustrated, and you will look for taste somewhere else. So during this japa and kirtan retreats, we want to create a taste in our practice, which will enliven our practice and also our relationship to Krishna. How would you describe taste? What is that? Now, I would want to say taste is something like an inner climate, an impetus also. That means a driving force which moves us forward. Taste is also a relish with something, but it's really something which happens inside. A taste in the practice is something which will appear in our heart. It will be like good weather in our heart, natural Krishna conscious appreciation, and so on. And I have always seen in the life of in my own life and in the lives of the devotees that this inner inner climate, so to say, this climate of taste, this inner relish, happens very naturally when we go into an environment which encourages us. When we go into a place where we feel encouraged. That's what you, what I felt when I came to Radhadesh yesterday, and when I walked this morning through Radhadesh. I like to walk by myself and see the guest house and see the dwellings of the devotees. I like to look from outside into the houses and see the steaming milk on the table. I like to go to the Tulsi house, like to be in the temple, like to inspect the college rooms when no one of the young people sees I'm there, like to walk through this spiritual paradise which has been created by the serious efforts of the devotees. And I feel, wow, I feel sheltered. I feel if everything goes wrong, I know a place where I can be. A shelter, an ashraya. For us Vaishnavas, this shelter or ashraya place is ultimately Sri Vrindavan Dham, the holy land of Krishna's pastimes, or one title says, the playground of God. When we enter Vrindavan, we feel home, we feel relieved. We feel it is very natural for us to remember Krishna. And it is very easy for us to do our spiritual practices. I told many times in the past that once there was a Jewish mother who wanted to take her sannyasi boy, sannyasi child, I wanted to say, or her child who had become a sannyasi, I think that's the best way to say, out of Vrindavan. She came with deprogrammers. This is something unusual. After staying only for one day in Vrindavan, she woke up and told her boy, or her child, whom she wanted to actually take out of Vrindavan, "I hate to admit it, but I woke up chanting." This is the effect of a holy place. It influences even against your own will. I felt the same thing here when I was in Radhadesh. When I spent the night here one night, and I woke up singing and chanting because I was here for the Radhadesh Mellows as a guest, and I had sung the whole day, so naturally I felt like singing all day. This is what happens when you come into a sacred environment. It supports your practice. It supports your spiritual life. During this Japa retreat, we will have three presentations each day. One is a discovery lecture in the morning. Then in the late morning, a workshop which is entitled Always in Vrindavan. We will do a few meditations during this workshop and a long group japa session where we will chant within the a spiritual atmosphere. We will bring our mind and ourselves into a spiritual atmosphere which will give a boost, means an impetus, an additional force to our practice, and in this way enliven us tremendously. You will see, you will, I would like to take almost a group photo today where you all look a little tired and all a little like after you have done a long journey. Hare Krishna. And you will see at the end, you will look like walking flashlights, like lightning bolts, full. Because during this workshop, we will actually chant in a divine atmosphere which will increase our focus and our taste in significant ways. And the last part which we do each evening, and for this I have already a live bhajan band. He's sitting next to me. We will actually, believe it or not, talk about Krishna's wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan. We will actually do that. We will not say we should do it. We will do it. Hare Krishna. So this Japa retreat has the motto, always in Vrindavan. What that means is that we want to create or we want to learn. Listen to this. We want to learn to create an inner atmosphere in our lives which can take care that we can do our practice out of taste, not out of mechanical duty consciousness and so on. And we will actually learn that, and then when we leave Radha Desh, we will be very, very enthusiastic. Most of us will start ecstatic new centers, I'm getting a little carried away. It would be good enough if you learn to do your spiritual practice each day with a great empowerment and taste.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Last year, like each year, I was in Vrindavan Dham, and towards the end we had our Govardhan and Vasana retreat, two very, very nice retreats which I would like to recommend you to visit in the future. This year Giriraj Maharaj will come again, and of course Burijam Prabhu and his good wife and Madhavananda and so many will be there to serve you. And when everything was over, the months of Kartik and the two retreats were over for me, I had to go to Delhi, where I was admitted into an Ayurvedic hospital because I had contracted typhoid fever. It was something which needed to be cured in the hospital. It had been a little like that. And I remember when I left Vrindavan, I felt very sad. And when I was in Delhi the first day, I felt I'm so close to Vrindavan, only 140 kilometers, not more. That's nothing. That's 2 hours drive. Or for us, in our Radha Sharanagati, it's half an hour drive. And I'm staying here in India's capital, which is so different from Vrindavan. And I must admit, I was sad. Then, one morning, I remember I read something in Prabhupada's books which totally inspired me to do every day a wonderful practice which I will teach in my workshops. I want to read to you what I read and what turned my life from sadness to happiness and empowered my practice. It was from the Nectar of Instructions, text 8, where the essence of all Krishna conscious advice is summarized. It says here, the essence of all advice is that one should eat and sleep. You are not with me. You're not listening. If you would have been listening, you would have protested loudly. But because you are on automatic pilot, you are just thinking, let this soon be over with. I don't need to concentrate. When some text comes, I switch off. Therefore, you didn't notice. Be here, please. You arrive, huh? So I will read it again to you. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day. My God, what should we do? In nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name. Acha, we should chant 24 hours a day. is Prabhupada serious? We should chant and remember the transcendental form of the Lord, qualities and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. It's a gradual process. You start to chant and it becomes more and more and more. In this way, one should reside in Braj and serve Krishna under the guidance of the devotees. So, the idea is one should be in a sanctified atmosphere and stay there. Now, Prabhupada then said, and I read this, I do reading in Prabhupada's books like this. I read until something strikes me, and I found this so striking. The essence of all advice is to become a chanter of the holy name 24 hours a day and do this in the atmosphere of Vrindavan. Wow, I said, let me find out. And I developed a doubt. What? I'm here in Delhi and most of the devotees are somewhere totally removed from Vrindavan. How can they follow the essence of all advice? And then I found this purport, the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 16. I remembered there was something in chapter 16 and I searched and I found it. If it is possible, one should go and physically be present in Brajabhumi Vrindavan and be engaged always in the service of the Lord, following the devotees in Brajadham in the spiritual realm of Braj. Leave Belgium, leave England, leave America, leave Germany. What are you doing there? Wasting your time. You should go, it says, if possible, to Vrindavan and practice there where it is very easy. If it is not possible, however, to be physically present in Vrindavan, one can meditate anywhere upon living in that situation. Wherever he may be, one must always think about life in Brajadham and about following in the footsteps of a particular devotee in the service of the Lord. So Prabhupada seems to say here, if you can't be physically in that very helpful atmosphere, be there at least mentally. We have dear guests. Welcome. Don't be shy. Sit with us. We will show some slides and make some music. You will enjoy. Sit down. You're very much welcome. Srila Prabhupada, in his own life, he said like this. As you know, he started his movement in New York, America. And once a person asked him, are you here with us? Are you here in America? And Prabhupada said, here I am now sitting in New York, the world's greatest city. But my heart is always in Vrindavan. That is where a devotee derives strength. You derive strength when you are connected with home. You lose your strength when you are disconnected from what you consider your spiritual home. So, strength comes in your life always when you have a sense of home. And home is that place or that activity where you derive, where there is a capability for loving exchanges. Huh? Loving exchanges, that makes a place home. You can stay in the town of your birth if there are no longer loving exchanges between friends and relatives. Then you are not home, but you are home where there are loving exchanges. There is where you are sheltered. So you can derive tremendous strength by learning to be mentally in a place called home. I want to give you a last quotation and then I will talk a little bit more freer. It's a beautiful quotation from Vrindavan Mahimamrita. It says, if one lives
I brought my orchestra for this one.
If one lives in the earthly land of Vrindavan, touches it, sees it, travels to it, meditates upon it, bows down to offer respects to it, sings or hears about its glorious qualities, carries its dust on his head, or if one has any relationship with this Vrindavan, then this purifying earthly Vrindavan will carry him to the supreme abode of Vrindavan in the spiritual world. This is the power of a holy place. When you connect with it in any ways, it will carry you to the spiritual world. And how to connect to Vrindavan while we do our practice of that you will learn in the workshops. I would like to now, at the end, just tell you a few practical things. What to expect in this retreat. For this, I need to show you a little bit. It's a secret what comes there. I need to show you a little bit about psychology. Wow, who made this beautiful elephant? Something is missing. This is our antakarana, or our inner self, our mind, our inner space. You know, when you chant and your mind goes all over the place, it goes all over the universe, it's very difficult to concentrate. You have four areas in your mind. You first of all have that what you call the manas. Manas is like the trunk of an elephant. It's the mind which goes into the external world and wants to grab things of interest. It constantly goes back and forth between accepting and rejecting, which are like the two tasks. You also have your intelligence. That's like the head of the elephant, which has big ears. An intelligent person hears informations and discriminates. Is this valuable for me or is this not valuable for me? That is the head of the elephant. But what is mostly there is a big, big belly of the elephant. Oh my God, this has a back also, this elephant. A big belly, and that is where the problem is. Your unconscious mind, the things which you are not really aware of. From that unconscious mind, it's called the subconscious also in English, so many impressions come. Usually when you chant, and when you try to concentrate on your spiritual practice, there is always so many impressions, so many disturbances. But because you don't know what is in there, because you don't know what is back, you can't fight it very easily. I would like to make it a little bit more simple.
Because some of you look at me and say, what are you talking about, please? When you do your chanting, this is your conscious mind. I write a C with it. You try to bring it to the practice, but constantly there are disturbances coming from the unconsciousness. That means past impressions, desires, talents, habits. And as you sit there on the surface of your consciousness, trying to bring your concentration to the practice, there is constantly disturbance coming. Pictures are coming. Illusions are coming. Desires are coming. And that's why you can't concentrate. So in a retreat, what we do, but see, these two areas, the conscious areas and the unconscious area, are separated by a big border. You can't come from your conscious mind into this land. It doesn't work. But there is, you can't understand even what is there. You don't know how you're programmed and what are the systems which work on you. But constantly there are influences coming from the subconscious mind or the unconscious mind into your conscious mind and spoil your whole life. You see the devotee sitting down, struggling with his mind. And constantly from this area, from this unknown land, this unknown region, things come so that he just can't concentrate. He can't pay attention. He can't be with it because he's mostly, the modern person is mostly ruled by impulses which come from there. And that is why changing a person or changing our life or changing our spiritual practice is so absolutely difficult for most of the people. Even if you have the best intentions and most powerful encouragements, you seem to not change. Even after 40 years of practice, some people just can't change, and they don't know why it is. It is because there are always things coming, seeds coming, or let me say, information's coming. So what we do during a retreat, we do practices, we gather informations, we do efforts which help us to put very positive, a very Krishna conscious. This is blue. Blue is the color of Krishna. Huh? Things into your unconscious mind so that you get positive instructions, positive impulses. Like when we were here for the Radha Desh Mellows, my dear devotees, we were chanting for, I think, like 8 hours, 9 hours, sometimes 10 hours a day. And now when we come here, because we have put new, very powerful and positive things into our subconscious or unconscious mind, we are getting a lot of help and a lot of inspirations. So what we do in very simple words is we do a positive Krishna conscious programming during the retreats, which will help us during our practice, so that we won't be always disturbed by unfavorable, unconscious impressions, but we will gather deep, deep, deep Krishna conscious impressions, which will stay with us for hopefully our life. That's what we do. This is very important. If you don't have in your life moments and facilities to create new, that is very deep impressions, you will not be able to have a very good spiritual life. That is what we want to do. Now, clear? Is this clear? The elephant is a little bit... I guess, yes, it's a little bit playful. Sometimes people ask, what is the skin in the elephant? It's your false ego. It's very thick, but very, very tender. When something comes on it, oh, you know. We have created for you, my God, who has written all this? This looks so beautiful. To put it on the webpage of Radhadesh, it's so good. We have given you, we will give you these six guidelines. I will post them on the wall so that you can, they should help you to make your retreat all what it can become. The first thing is enter a new space. What this means is enter into Vrindavan. Oh, Krishna, that's so beautiful. But it means also separate yourself from the outside world. I want to really encourage you to minimize email contact, mobile telephones, or any contact. Just separate a little bit. Go be here in this holy environment and don't break the environment. I once had a retreat. It was in America, where it was going very well. It was with called the Bhakti retreat. It was with outsiders. But each evening, I heard in one room some noise, and the room was just next to me, to my room, and I. One day I was just so curious, and because I'm from Germany and we are chronically impolite, I just, you know, opened the door, and there were the two people, and they were seeing some foolish TV. It looked like Dallas, or, you know, I don't know what, how Dallas looks, but I heard Dallas is a little dull, you know. It looked just so mundane, like a soap opera. Is it soap opera? And I thought, my dear people, you're on a spiritual retreat, and each evening you go back to the material world. Is that what you want to do? And we had a serious talk, and we found out that they did this because they felt a little strange in the new territory. So they always went back in the evening into the old world. And I recommend it, try. Just give me 3 days, and we will make a new person out of you. Just be with us. And they surrendered because I'm from Germany. and they really made an experience. So I really request you, separate from the outside world. Allow yourself to enter a new space. Second rule is join a community of seekers. This I like very much. We are all in it together now. We are entering the retreat on this evening. Be with the people. They're beautiful people. Beautiful people. How do we say this in correct English? Wonderful people who are searching for spiritual life. Discuss with them. Profit from their association. In a moment, I will introduce you to yourself, to your people here. Take part fully, share openly. And one thing is, that's very difficult, I know. It's also very difficult for me. I suffer with you, but be punctual. This is very good. Because how can we start if even one of you is still under the shower? We need full participation to create a joyful group atmosphere. Third rule, these are not rules, these are like guidelines. They are meant to help you. Take complete responsibility for your experience. With this I want to say, in a retreat, I'm not the most important person. No. Although I will speak a lot or discuss a lot, but the most important person is you. It's you who has to do the work. It's you who have to apply the processes which you learn. It's you who have to share. It's your retreat. I'm really want to say this. When we go to a lecture, it's very important that there is a good lecturer who's hopefully prepared and presents a subject matter which is both interesting and relevant to our life. Yes, a lot of is dependent on the presentator. In a retreat, the presenter is only someone who is, the English word is a facilitator. It means someone who helps you to go deep and to do your own journey. So please take full responsibility for this. Trust and depend on your own ability also. Be a little brave, because there will be new things. I will ask you to meditate and so on. There you need to make your own discoveries. Now it gets intense. Careful, fasten your seat belts, please. Enter a symbolic death. What I mean with this is this separation from the outside world and the separation from what you think you know. It's switch off, so to say, your material life and the constant chatter in your mind, and be ready to practice in solitude and silence also. Fifth is experience a new birth. When you practice the new insights and discoveries. This is very important. Tomorrow we will start in the workshop with a very powerful practice, and I will request you to maintain this practice throughout your 6 days or 5 days or whatever it is. You have to immediately apply it. If you only hear something and it goes out here, it will be like the morning lecture this morning. I can guarantee you that most of you have forgotten what you heard this morning, because only when you practice something will it stay and will it stick to your heart. So this is very important for you. And finally, this I always say, we have devotee retreats, so this is a devotional effort. When you are going through this retreat, depend on Krishna's mercy. He will give you just the right hints, just the right understandings and insights which you need in your spiritual life. Come as a person who has a question, how can I go deeper in my life? And come as a person and stay as a person who receives answers. Huh? Let me repeat. Come as a person who has a question and stay as the person who receives answers. Huh? Be a receiver, not an achiever. Krishna will throw the right informations in your inbox. Modern language in your heart. Huh? These are 6 guidelines which will help you. Now, coming to the closing of this first session, I want to help you in our first exercise on this retreat. I want to help you to find your best friend in this retreat. Let me just put this properly. It has been seen in spiritual life that, and in life in general, that people who have a conscious intention, a sankalpa, usually do better than people who don't have a conscious intention. We have a college here, and in traditional learning processes, the entry into a Gurukul, for instance, a traditional school where you learn at the feet of a teacher, the students are asked to join a little ceremony which is called the Sankalpa ceremony, where they build their intention. The Western world became aware of intention, usually in the field of sport. I have heard from one golf player, he is a world master in golf, I forgot his name. He found out if before he goes onto the golf field, the day before he visualizes a good, how do you call it? Swing? A good, is it? How do you call this movement, please? Ryan, what is it? Swing? It's a swing. Neela Mani is an English teacher, so she knows. This is swing, you know, when you bring that, is it a golf club or is it a club? Sounds like it's a club, huh? It's a small club, you know. When is it brought in a swing? So if he visualizes how the ball flies through the air into the horizon, you know, not in the horizon, it flies, and then it just falls at the right place and at rest there on the green lawn. Then next morning, when he plays, his body seems to do it automatically. So have weightlifters and runners found out if they just program themselves with an intention, I want to do this, I want to lift this thing, then it works. They have found out in sports that 70% of successful performances are not really the activity. 70% is in the intention, in the inner orientation, in the willpower, and so on. I want to do this, and only 20% is in the actual activity, and 10% is also in the preparation. So this has been discovered, and I think it has been discovered from the old Indian or Vedic scriptures. If you have an inner orientation, I want to go back home, back to Godhead, or I want to learn to chant my rounds with taste, then this inner orientation carries you through the whole retreat and helps you to achieve miraculous ends. But if you just come like, okay, I come here because I didn't have anything better to do and I heard there's nice bread and Radha Desh in the bakery, you know, you just won't get so much out of this experience. It's really very important for you as an individual to think, why have you come here? What is it that you wish to do? It's very important to have an inner orientation and to keep it with you. The first step in anything is, in other words, to create a vision for that. Huh? The first step in anything is to create a vision. If you don't have a vision, doesn't work. I believe that is the difference between successful spiritual practitioners and unsuccessful and mental wrecks. Those who are practicing with success, they know why they do this. They know what they want. And they are even able to come to Mangal Arati and do things which because they know, I want to do this for my spiritual life. It's my chance. It's my opportunity. But if you lose that inner fire, you lose your driving force in spiritual life. So I would like to request you to turn to your neighbor. I will do this a few times. Some neighbor whom you feel comfortable with. Also, if you should happen to sit with three people, that's all right. Gaura Hari. Hare Krishna. Okay, who has Hare Krishna? Yes, well, we will do something specific, not just talk. who has not found the neighbor? Please look around, and then you will find a neighbor or a friend. Ryan, you found someone? Yeah. Shyamananda, you found someone? Yes, good. Everyone is set? Good. Sudevi, ready? Now you have to listen. Radha Govinda Prabhu. Yes, Radha Govinda Prabhu has arrived. So please now listen. This is now also our guests. You can also do this. You can talk to each other. I hope you do this sometimes. what do you hope to achieve while attending this Japa and Kirtan retreat? Those of you who don't come to a retreat, you can just asked yourself a question like what is your aspiration in life, your deeper aspiration in life, because you are here in a spiritual place, and that is naturally inspiring us, such a place for the deeper things in life. This is only for our guests, but for those of you who go to the retreat, what do you actually hope to discover and or improve in this retreat? Please share this with your neighbor and talk truthfully. Don't say, I hope to chant from after the retreat every day 108 rounds minimum. You know, it should be something realistic, because I will ask you to work on exactly that intention, your own intention, and you will see you will get some nice things. One guest has come. We are doing an exercise now with everyone. You can join any group you wish to join, and the groups will discuss what do they hope to attain in this retreat. You might explore it a little bit. It might not be absolutely clear to you now because you just came from work or from you just traveled and you are just happy that you made it in some ways, and so on. But as you discuss, you can find it. You should discover it. And when you have it, you will feel in your heart like, wow, this was not mental. This was not an imagination. I really feel I want to work on it. It should be something you should look until you find something where you feel a glowing yes in your heart, right? Where the heart says, wow, yes, Ayataxi, yes, I can do this, I can go there. Is it clear? I wish you a very creative 5 minutes. Start now.